town you never heard of.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
Let's go, the podcast for the people, by the people.
Ben didn't get Andy's the memo.
Ready today.
Yeah, well, I had the good fortune of calling a couple championship football games. They just wrapped up.
Nice. So you're in voice mode?
I was in voice mode, yes.
The Millard.
Millard South is so good. Wow.
I really thought Westside was going to win.
No way.
I didn't track them all year, but...
They got out-recruited by Millard South.
Out-recruited?
Weird.
Yeah. Yeah, well, don't feel bad for Westside. This is their sixth championship game in a row. They were the best at recruiting.
Yeah, I thought so.
They out-recruited Creighton Prep, Bellevue West, the whole nine yards. But then Millard South's like, well, what if we do it even better? And they got a new young coach. He's real aggressive, and a lot of people are mad about it. But as said on the broadcast, these are the rules. They're playing within the rules. Deal with it.
Yeah.
You want to have a good team? You get out and recruit. You build a new weight room. You do all those things.
That's what I was going to say. What's the draw for recruitment in high school?
Well, if you've ever been to some of these high schools, like they're starting to look like colleges, you know, personal trainers, this and that, tutors.
So it's just like, we'll provide you like really nice facilities if you come here.
And we'll get you out of Omaha. You don't have to deal with OPS, Omaha Public Schools.
Yeah, but that is kind of like the lower tier of the Millard schools.
You think so?
Well, it always was back in the day. It was like Millard West, and then you kind of have North, and then you have South. Now South is better.
South even has, I mean, they even changed their mascot to get up with the times.
Okay, see, I am way far removed.
They're the Patriots now. Okay. They've been the Patriots for a long time.
Oh, Patriots, yeah.
I'm just saying, like, good for them if they're stepping up their game.
They've really stepped up their game.
Well, somebody found some money.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, who found this? Where is it coming from?
You know, one of the things they do, and Lincoln's terrible at this too, and another discussion, but they share a football field, you know, Buell Stadium. It's between those three Millard schools. And I think you should have to pay for and do your own football stadium. And I think there's a psyche to that too. Like, you get to take ownership of it.
Papillion does that too.
I hate that. Like, you should have your home field. There should be a home field for every. And if you can't afford your own football field, your own tennis court, well, then don't do it. Everybody's like, no, it makes sense. The taxpayers only got to pay for one football. They don't have a school. Like, what are we doing? Yeah. You know, like, I hate taxes, but I like tax money going to things like education,
right?
Like roads.
Yeah.
You know, so like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going off on a weird tangent here, but
Andy, geez.
I know it. But congratulations to Millard South. They are awesome. And they're going to win it next year too. I'm going out on a limb here. Something like
predictions.
Oh, it's crazy. Like, out of the 16 top recruits in the junior class, something like 11 or 12 of them are on Millard South's.
Jeez.
On their starting
roster.
So they're all going to be seniors next year?
Yeah, and they just beat the living hell out of Westside this year.
So.
Yeah.
Well, it's Thanksgiving week. Deer rifle season in Nebraska has come to an end.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
Some people had some success, some people didn't.
Yeah.
I think the wives did this year, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Ashley got hers on opening morning. And Morgan, congratulations. I saw on Facebook you got a
only
buck
took
as well.
5 days, but
hey, you've got one. I didn't. I got skunked.
Had to put in some work this year.
Yeah.
Did you learn any lessons?
Did I learn any lessons?
Oh boy.
Yeah, I guess to be patient.
Yeah.
Screaming at a deer doesn't really work.
What are you saying? Get over here. Slow down.
No, it's kind of a story, but it did kind of turn its head when I made a noise, but it didn't actually stop it in its tracks like Ben's noise last year. Because I was in the blind by myself. And so I was there for maybe 5 minutes. And I was like, holy shit.
It's already here.
Oh my God. Pick up my gun and it's walking, and I was like, ah! Or I did something. And Ben goes, you screamed? And I go, well, it turned its head and kind of was like, what the fuck? And like, just kept walking. And I was like, oh my God, you better go. And then I just shot him.
All right.
So, anyways, I need to work on my calls. Yeah, or like, what's the noise supposed to be?
You want to do a bleat, like a meh.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought I did it a little bit lower, but I think it was too high pitch.
Well, do it for us here.
I don't know if I can do it.
Pretend that our guest is a deer that you just, you know, that you know.
I think okay. I did like a caw-caw, like a caw.
Oh, all right.
It was a crow. It was crowish.
Yeah,
like
worked.
I said, it I turned its head.
I can't judge. I did not get one.
But it did not stop walking. Mm-hmm. And so, anyways, yeah.
We were real slow. And, it, you know, it was tough weather, windy, really cold. It was kind of a earlier rut due to weather. But Garrett turned to me after sitting there for about 3 hours just freezing our asses off on this hillside and goes, "Man, it's really slow. I've never seen it so slow." Two hillsides over, that's
did
Ashley.
Oh,
right. Oh.
And I just started laughing because it was just classic. One shot, that's it. There's a deer down. You just knew yep. it. And, you know, so I started laughing, and of course, that's what happened.
So. That's awesome.
Our guest today, Andrew Zahn, that's how you pronounce it, right?
Yes.
You got one.
I did get one, yep.
Yeah.
Opening weekend, but...
Right out of the gate?
Well, it was... last light of Sunday, so
okay.
it was kind of,
yeah.
and I wasn't going to be able to go closing weekend, so.
Oh, ooh. So that was the time.
Yeah. Right in the nick of time.
Yeah.
Could you have gone during the week or no, with work? Or?
Yeah, if I had more.
It would have been tricky.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
If I had more vacation leave, maybe, but.
Okay, yeah. Well, it's meant to be.
Yeah, 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 yep, so.
It's always a story. It's always a story with old deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So. You either yeah. come home with a deer or a lesson, so.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah,
it's
true.
And now all the hard work begins, getting everything processed and putting it to work.
That's right. Yep, yep. We spent the next day after letting it hang,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing all the processing and got it all frozen up now, and we'll do a big grind day or
yep.
you know. So.
Yep, that's like what we're gonna do
yep.
or what we do.
Yep, yep. That'll be the plan.
It does seem like a lot when you.
Oh yeah.
It's a day to.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my
it's
gosh,
a lot of
and
work.
Then we take it home and you clean it and
yep.
bag it and yeah.
But I think it's nice because you're like reconnecting with where your food comes from. You
agree.
Know?
For sure. Yeah.
yeah.
I think, I don't know, I've always had this opinion that if more people had to, or if we all had to clean our own meat, mm-hmm. so to speak, there'd probably be a lot more vegetarians out there.
Yeah.
Well, I bet you wouldn't eat it so fast.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And so much. And you're onto something there because you don't want to get into this, well, a cheeseburger at Burger King's cheaper than making a deer burger and it tastes better and all this other stuff. Try and do that with like a Canadian fishing trip. It's like you come back with four walleye, you cut up the fillets and you're thinking, oh my God, each fillet was about $780.
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
So you don't start doing that.
Yeah.
But it does. I don't even know if you can quantify that. If growing an appreciation from where, you know, where your food came from.
Yeah.
And you also kind of take your time and you enjoy what you're eating,
yeah.
you know, a little bit more. So I don't think you'd have more vegetarians. I think you'd have just better meat eaters.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I agree that people would definitely would, like you said, would eat slower. I'd say would probably eat less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not just like, cause I feel like so often when I eat beef or chicken or whatever, like, I'm not even thinking twice about it. I'm just scarfing it down. It's great.
Just
I love it. Yeah, just
yeah.
keep eating it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if we sit there and we eat the deer, like last night we cooked the tenderloins.
Mm.
It was awesome. Mm-hmm. You're mm-hmm. enjoying it. There wasn't
yeah.
a lot of it, you
right.
know, but we were full. And
mm-hmm.
and also, I don't know if you guys feel like this, but when I'm going through the butchering process and the whole process of deboning it and making the cuts and cleaning mm-hmm. the silver skin off and cleaning the hair out of it and, you know, everything that goes along with that. When I get done, I don't feel like eating anything.
Mm.
Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't say I feel gross, but I just feel like I don't
You're
want anything
hungry.
Right now. Like I have no appetite.
Yeah.
Mm. And I enjoyed doing it.
Yeah.
But it just gives you a different kind of feeling than what
we
I think a lot of people
that.
Expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. yeah. It doesn't make you like, starving
and that oh that that night we processed the deer that night and you guys know like these bucks and I'm sure does are the same way have kind of a musky smell to them
oh, yeah.
especially you know, this time of year
yeah yeah so you're going through all that I could not get the smell out of my nose for like 2 days. And it's just how it is, you know?
Yeah.
And then that night we go home and we're like, well, we just want something quick and easy. I stopped, got some frozen pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
I could taste it in my pizza.
I was like, what?
Like the smell that what? I was buried in all day was like in the pepperoni.
But it was really, it was like on you. It was just.
It was just your senses are just like, you probably super heightened because you're doing a really serious thing, you know,
slow
you're dealing with there.
Too,
yet, and that only happens once a year if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it just carries on. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't realize that. And it would never make me not want to do it. It just makes me appreciate it that much more.
Yeah,
you know, the whole process.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, fun. I didn't get, though, the buck that we saw on the camera.
Never did see him.
No. Mm-mm.
If you would have got him, Ben would have had to shell out about another $1,000 for the mount.
Yeah.
This thing was a monster. I bet that deer was seven, at the least 6 years old.
I mean, I was
a stud.
I think that was, I showed you that video, the one we saw in the backyard.
Yeah, that was a good buck.
That might have been the same one.
Really?
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, because he was, that
but
one
he was
back
always
here was
moving
big
at night.
Yeah. Well, that's how a lot of them get old. They mm-hmm. just turn nocturnal and you yeah. never see them.
Oh, yeah. I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you're not allowed to.
Yeah, it's illegal to mm-hmm. spotlight.
And you shot your poor little buck. He was probably on the scent of some doe, some hot doe. And
mm-hmm.
that's why he didn't stop at you screaming at him. He's like, nope. I got places to be.
I know. But, you know, that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, back to our guest, Andrew. Andrew works for the Nebraska Forestry Service, correct?
Yes. That's a real thing. Nebraska has a forestry.
Yeah, a lot of people. I mean, that's a good point. You know, people think about Nebraska. You don't think about, like, why would you need a forestry service?
Right. Like tall grass?
Yeah.
Cornfields?
Yeah.
Cornfield forest?
No, yeah.
Not quite.
So out here where we record and where I grew up, as you're driving in, you pass this tree farm. It's always been called the tree farm when I was a kid. And as I said, we've been out here since the early 90s, and I always knew it was there. You know, there was never really any activity going on. It was a fenced off property. We could never go in there. It was kind of like, don't mess with it. No one really knows what's going on, but it's a big government run property,
right?
You know? So it was always like, I was always intrigued about it.
So you and your buddies did break in.
Yeah.
And check it
I
all
was
out.
Thinking the same thing when they say, don't do it. Did you go in there?
Honestly, we never actually did.
Okay, I swear. Okay,
you did some other things, but not there.
We would dirt bike and four wheeler out here all the time, you know, and, we were always heading towards the river and the tree farm was the other way. And I'd have to pass too many people to get out there, and people hate dirt bikes. And
yeah,
I mean, one time
we were
down by the river. Actually, it was around that that Penny Lane area. Mm-hmm. We were riding, and some guy comes out and just starts ripping our ass. And I was young,
right?
I dumped my bike. He comes up to me, grabs me by the helmet, like right on the face. Get out of here! You guys are tearing my stuff up. You know, and we're just riding dirt roads.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But
can you imagine doing that now, like
to a kid?
Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm waiting for you to say no. You would not do that.
I mean, I wouldn't.
But yes, but like, that's crazy.
Well, you'd be your other buddies would already have their cell phones out and they'd film.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're doing a really good job of getting rid of accountability. So.
Well, and there
and kids are too lazy to get on dirt bikes.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Like, how many kids are on dirt bikes anymore?
Yeah, it's the kids' fault. I want to blame the kids.
Little bastards. Anyway, so. Have always been intrigued about that, and then just in this past year, well, in the past few years, I've noticed activity out there,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of seemed like things are getting cleaned up, and you know, just driving by from what you can see. So it's been of interest of mine. And then just this past year, there's a graveyard next to it that
a cemetery.
Cemetery. What's the difference?
Yeah.
Well, a graveyard to me sounds like it could just be like a little private thing,
uh-huh.
you know, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Okay.
Cemetery, you know, it's a
official.
Yeah, and there's a public, you know.
Got it. Yep.
Oh.
So there's a cemetery next to it.
There we go.
And these military flags popped up, and then kind of this little forest, and I see more activity, and so I kind of dug into that,
mm-hmm.
and there was this memorial, veteran and first responder memorial forest was being built, and I was like, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I just want to know more about this place. It's cool. You know, we interview common folk, and right. this fits right in there. Yeah. This is common something people different. Out there doing something that is really cool that no one mm-hmm. really knows about. So I contact the Forestry Service. They put me in contact with Andrew, who heads it up out there. What would be your official title?
Official title is Operations Supervisor for the property.
Operations Supervisor. So spoke with Andrew literally just a couple of minutes from our studio here and invited him in. He said, yeah, let's chat about it. So we wanted to learn a little bit about the history of the tree farm, you know, how it came about, what's going on there today, what's up with the memorial.
There's still military area. Flags out there. They there have those is, cool yeah. lights, those yeah. LED mm-hmm. lights on top yep. that are like solar because they come on at night.
Right.
Yeah.
And then and a little bit about Andrew as well. So let's start with that. When did you start out there? How long have you been out there?
So the property hires every year student workers, college student workers at the university. And so that's how I got my start out there when I was a freshman, saw the job posting, you know, chainsaw work, you know, just planting trees, taking mm-hmm. care of trees, stuff that I had experience with previously, mainly through my folks. They had a property growing up that had trees on it. It was wooded and invasive species that all of us kids got to help dad take mm-hmm. care of and, you know, fix and fence and stuff like that. Lots of manual labor, running tractors. And so when I saw in 2013 this position for a student worker, I jumped on it and worked there through my entire undergrad. And once I graduated, I couldn't work there as a student worker, obviously, anymore. So I did a little gig doing home remodeling. And then in 2017, this full-time position for the operations supervisor opened up. And my previous supervisor, when I was a student worker, actually recommended that I apply for it, and the rest is history.
So. Wow.
So I think it's important to point out as well, the property is owned by the University of Nebraska, right?
Correct, yep. Owned by the university and managed by the Nebraska Forest Service.
Got it. Yep, just so folks can understand that.
Are there other...
There are, yeah, the university... Okay. Well, there are at least two other properties that the Forest Service manages directly that the university also owns.
I see.
One being right nearby. Mm-hmm. Its name is known. It's known as the Timmis Ecological Preserve. So, you know, there's a conservation easement on it. So, really, all we are allowed to do is manage invasive species on the property. We can't do a whole lot of other work. It's meant to be more of a preserve. And then Horning, obviously. And then there's a property out by North Platte. It's called Cedar Canyon. It's a very unique property, just rolling hills mm-hmm. with lots of cedar. There's a few hardwoods, but it's mostly cedar. And they graze cattle out there. And but there's not much infrastructure out there, so not a whole lot goes on. But
well, isn't there a national forest in Nebraska out towards that area?
Yeah.
So what is
probably thinking of Halsey National Forest.
Is that what it is? Yeah. Halsey? Okay. And it's recognized as a federal forest or whatever.
Yes.
What's the difference between like Horning and that?
Well, I think because it is a national forest, mm-hmm. the U.S. Forest Service is
they manage it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Oh. And we were actually out there last year. A big wildfire swept through there and took out a lot of the trees. Most of that forest is hand planted.
Oh, okay.
And so it burned up a lot of cedar and pine trees. And we went out there because they were going to try and utilize the timber that had burned. You know, it mostly just charred the outside. There was still some usable timber there. But so we went out and did a timber cruise and marked it. And it was promising, though, because you could see little volunteer pines following the fire that were going to pop up. And
I always thought that was fascinating because isn't there like certain type of pine cones that they only like sprout their seeds out once a fire like goes over top, once it hits a certain
heat.
And I just think that's so cool that
really
like fire adapted species.
Yeah. It's just crazy how evolution works even with plants, like something that you don't even think of.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Is that where you went like dirt biking or whatever?
Yeah, that place, I mean, it's been on fire a few times, hasn't it?
Off-roading.
Yeah, because we went out there, it had been at least 2 or 3 years ago. And that was just after a fire. because we rode out there for a few days.
Okay.
And you could see how everything had burned. So much of it had burned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for the most part, fires aren't bad. Like, right. They used to just always roll through, you know, and help with the regrowth of stuff, really.
Right.
So
it's when a fire starts encroaching in on an inhabited population area, you know.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's where it gets to be problematic.
So for yourself, you had mentioned going to the university and that. What about before that? What where did you grow up?
I grew up in Syracuse, Nebraska.
Okay.
A little small town, but smaller than Plattsmouth anyway. But.
Not like Syracuse, New York?
No.
Yeah, quite a bit smaller.
A little smaller than that, okay. All right.
And what did you always have desire to get into something like this, or what kind of sparked the interest for you when you were younger?
Yeah, I originally thought I would be like a game warden or a conservation officer.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
But I learned a little bit more about, you know, what the day-to-day with that job would be like, and kind of rethought it a little bit. I always knew I wanted to do, like, it seemed like it was more of a, there was definitely field work with being a game warden, but I think there would be a lot more office work involved, and probably some not so fun work as well. Sure. You know, I've heard stories about what they find at public areas. And
what you have to deal with.
Yeah. And so, and there's not a whole lot of, you know, there's not a whole lot of, unless you get into the private industry, there's not a whole lot of opportunities to, like, do just land management unless, you know, I mean, the public positions that are available are usually pretty competitive and hard to find. But I just, I always knew I wanted to work with my hands and not be trapped in an office all day, but it's just not who I am.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I got one younger brother and two older sisters.
So you're the middle.
Yep.
Bad middle? He laughs.
Third
like,
one.
I'm a middle kid, and they always say you're the bad middle kid.
Yeah. Or just the one that everyone forgets about.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. See, okay, we get it. But I thought it was interesting when you...
Come on.
But I thought it was interesting when you said that you did a lot of that stuff with your parents, and you know, when they had land, that you said that quick, and that you wanted to continue doing it. I feel like it's, of course, it's going to be one or the other, but a lot of kids would probably be like, I don't. Like, I was made to do this. I want to do something totally different.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool that then now your career is basically what some of what you were doing growing up.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, my dad by trade was a pork producer. And forestry was kind of always like a side hobby of his that he was just always interested in. And I think he probably wishes that he could have worked in a similar position that I'm working now.
Yeah. Does he get to come out and see?
Yeah.
Like, you work or?
Yep. So actually, one of the demonstrations we have at Horning is like a, it's called the alley crop, where there's rows of nut producing trees with, we have grass growing that gets harvested as hay in between these rows of trees. But so the nut trees, there's pecans. And in Nebraska, you wouldn't think pecans would grow very well. And some don't. But northern pecan grows fairly well. And so in the world of pecan or nut producing trees, sometimes you have to graft. You have a, the tree's roots are one variety of pecan, and then you can actually graft on a stick from a proven producing tree onto the stump of that root stock is what it's called.
Yeah.
And the stick is called scion. And in a short amount of time, that tree accepts that little stick.
What?
And it will actually, it's kind of like a Frankenstein experiment. It'll grow and become the new top of the tree if everything goes well. It's, there's a lot
of.
Yeah. So my dad has always been interested in nut producing trees. And so he's actually part of the Nebraska Nut Growers. And we've kind of formed a partnership with them where they'll come out every once a year and help us out grafting some trees.
Oh, very
cool. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and they get, in the future when our trees are much larger, we'll harvest more scion sticks and then give them to the nut growers.
That's real big in like apple trees, like fruit, like grafting and stuff like that.
Yep.
And the more you learn, the more, I don't know, kind of cool, more interesting it is.
Yeah.
You know, I've just like dabbled in it a little bit. I was thinking of like planting a stamp. I think they called it a stamp of apple trees, like out in some of our pastures.
Yep.
And that would just be to attract more deer so I could shoot them. So. But I hear your dad loud and clear about, does he still work with pigs, with hogs?
No, he's retired now.
So our barn, that big white barn in front of our ranch there, it has cubicles built in it for pigs.
Okay. Yep.
And my dad said the happiest day of his life, other than when I was born, was when they sold all the hogs, when they got out of the pig business completely.
Why?
Well,
is it they're a grind?
They're an MF-er to deal with. Is probably the nicest way to say it. I worked at a hog confinement farm in college for a couple summers in a row, and I can attest they are MFers
because they're just nasty.
Well, especially in a confined operation,
loud, demanding.
They're usually very curious creatures, you know. And
I see.
Fairly intelligent.
Yeah.
And when they're trapped in a concrete box all day, they're gonna get a little rowdy.
Yeah, nasty. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But
and they're mean, like you got to move in the boar with the, you know, and, oh boy, Jesus.
Yeah.
You'll bite your leg off.
Yeah.
Okay, but back to the wood. Isn't that that wood that you like for your smoker?
Pecan, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we don't get it around here.
I remember you saying that. So.
Right. Well.
Well, if you have a down tree. Oh,
look at that. Yeah. See the wheels turning here.
If you have a down tree, we might take that off your hands for you.
We'll actually travel to Oklahoma or Texas to get loads of it. Yeah. Which it's cheap down there. I mean, you could get two truckloads for a couple $100 or $100 or whatever. But and then there's guys up here that sell it like half that for like $600, you know, because they're hauling it. But The pecan wood in general is such a good smoking wood.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to beat.
Well, we had an apple tree fall over in our first house, and I used that.
Yeah,
I went and found a chipper. I've got
one of these. Well, that tree that you can see right there that's dead is an apple tree. So probably in the next year or two, we'll be cutting that up and splitting it and we'll use that for smoking wood too. But
love it.
Otherwise, just like beef barbecue and even pulled pork or whatever, around here, it's usually oak, maybe some hickory.
I felt like pork's really good with apple wood or any fruiting tree. Mm-hmm.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So anyway, I think it's pretty cool that, you know, at a young age, you kind of really knew what you wanted to do and was able to follow through with it.
Yeah.
The job is, or from what you're saying, I can tell that you're, you know, the kind of guy, like you said, likes to work with your hands, likes to get dirty. But it seems to me that this job is also very like intellectual in terms of you have to have a good like science understanding.
Sure.
So was that something you were always into, or has that just been kind of part of like, oh well, I have to do this too? Or
no, I've definitely always been interested in science, and part of that might have been due to my upbringing. I I don't have a degree in forestry or even horticulture. It's fisheries and wildlife. But there were still classes along the way that I took where, you know, biology and soil science and different things like that, animal science. You do have to kind of – definitely got to have a base understanding of species identification.
Right, yeah.
And then knowing how those species react to certain I mean, in the case of invasive species, how those species react to certain control methods, what control method works the best, you know, what chemical to use. There's definitely an element of science to it.
And for sure.
And there's, you know, one of the big things about science that I think sometimes gets lost today is you have to be okay with being wrong sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be willing to admit that, you know, you might not know the answer, but that's okay. And that experimentation and trial and error is important.
You can learn. You can run an experiment and learn. Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. Well, that's something new. You know what he is? He's a product of, and I think it's moving this way, where you actually worked there for a number of years while you were a student.
Mm-hmm.
So you had hands-on experience, and that weighed way more heavy than some piece of paper saying, I'm a biologist and I understand trees. No, you actually did the work. You put in the time to work. You had the passion for it. And they actually went out and looked you up. You know, they could have just found some hoity-toity guy True. With all these degrees
yeah.
from Syracuse University out of New York. Yeah. But no, they wanted Andrew, you know?
Yeah. So,
and I think it's good. I think it's I would rather have somebody that has the passion but then also has the experience. So you, like, fit the mold perfectly for what I think they needed there.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
What do you do, like, most of your day? I mean, are you mostly by yourself, too?
Yeah, normally it's...
So you like being alone?
I'm kidding. It's like the Lorax.
Yeah.
With the trees.
I've been given that nickname.
Yeah. Okay, there you go.
But...
Do you get home and just chitty-chat because you haven't been able to talk to anybody all day?
Yeah, it's definitely the worst in the winter.
Oh, okay.
You know, all summer I have... And into the fall, some student workers out there to
okay
to keep myself from going insane. But I've never been I always knew that would probably be a part of the job, and it's not a huge deterrent for me.
Uh-huh.
Usually I'm just so busy that I don't even
So you're running a tractor, you're planting, or like
just chainsaws,
everything.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And it's different throughout the year. Every season, there's kind of a different, I don't know what you'd call it, direction that we're, you know, trying to progress towards. And throughout the year, you can't do some things, right? Like there's some, like obviously during the growing season, that's when you're doing a lot of spraying and. And then towards the fall, when the invasive trees are kind of sending there's obviously sap flow in a tree, right? So in the fall, all trees are sending sap down into the roots to prepare for winter and dormancy. And that's usually a good time to hit them with some chemical because it'll just carry that chemical right down into the root system. And it's a little bit more effective than in the spring when it's more of an upward flow out to the leaves.
Yeah, it's coming up. Yeah. That's interesting.
So, and then the summer, there's just a lot of mowing. So there's a lot of time spent on a lawnmower. And
can this get to be like a 3-hour podcast? Because I got so many questions for you. You know, cause like we're talking about evolution and how like even trees and grasses build these defense mechanisms.
Right.
So like some fruiting trees, if they get taken over by a certain insect or whatever, they'll just stop producing fruit for like 2 years until that insect moves on. And I could see that happening of like, okay, this is the fifth year in a row. This asshole is going to spray us. We're going to stop sending our sap down to the root system. Yeah. Like, I think you run into that stuff all the time.
Yeah, there's definitely some weeds in particular that are Roundup resistant.
Hate weeds. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in our agroforestry demonstrations, we're trying to keep the weeds at bay so that, you know,
you got to change the Lysol up, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, but I thought I heard that dandelions are good for something. Didn't we hear this the other day, like a few months ago?
So,
why are people killing them off?
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful flower.
No,
it's
like
a nutritious
like
leaf
there's
in your
like
salad.
You could eat it or something. Yeah,
yeah. You definitely can.
Okay, so
make tea out of it.
Yeah, so maybe we shouldn't kill the weeds. I'm kidding.
Is that an urban legend though? Because I've heard this for years that if you want to be a millionaire overnight, just start a dandelion field and then you can harvest that 18 times a year and you can sell it. Blah, 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 and like. Well, then why doesn't everyone do it?
Yeah.
Like, there's got to be
a real market. And,
but I don't know.
It's definitely got a stigma about it. Dandelions do for some reason.
Yeah. Oh, I know what it was. It's not the flower. It's the leaf.
Yeah,
you can put it in the salads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the flower, you just throw that.
You might be able to make something with it. Like I've heard of dandelion wine.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyways, that's.
See, and then you can sell the wine. You can do the flour with the wine. Yeah, it's
all
like,
the things.
Like
start that business, Andy.
No. everyone tells me, like, oh, it's the way to go, but okay, then why don't you do it? Like, who's doing that?
My opinion on dandelions is that they're like they're an important part of a system rebuilding itself. And everyone just wants to kill them, you know, and we kill them too in our yard at the house. Normally I just pick them, just because you don't like seeing this popping up here and there or whatever. But again, it's not that big of a deal. It's just it's like a social thing or something. But anyway, for me, when I see them, like they got a pretty good size root on them and that's beneficial, you know, for the soil. It's it's like cover crops, you know, that people will do in farm, like turnips and things like that, radishes, you know, that are going to go in and they're going to bore holes and they're going to create room for air and water. And I mean, dandelions do a lot of that. Like they're part of rebuilding the landscape, but I don't know, people just hate how they look.
Right. Well, it's a marketing thing too. You know, get rid of weeds.
Yeah.
We're told what a good yard looks like.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sorry, that was
one
a tangent.
Thing that we haven't mentioned yet is what this place is actually called. So. What's the official name of...
The official name is Horning State Farm Demonstration Forest.
Okay.
And for the longest time, it was just Horning State Farm.
Yep.
Around, you know, early 2000s, the direction of the farm decided to go away from research and more towards like an education center.
Hmm.
And or in this case, a demonstration center, where if there's landowners that have, you know, little wooded plots or... You know, maybe they have a good stand of there's some good walnuts or, you know, some decent oak trees that they're interested in bringing to market as lumber or timber. We have all of these demonstrations out there at the farm that can kind of like, you know, you can tell them like, well, here's what you can do to increase the production of these trees or, you know, here's some invasive species that you may have. Here's how we control it, the proven methods of it for control and.
Did that shift open the door for a lot of really cool stuff, like new stuff? And you mentioned, like, when you were growing up, nothing was ever happening there. And we took our kids to an event. What was that called?
So, Forest Festival.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. Those were, like, little stations, and they got to build different things out of wood or whatever. You know, there was an axe throwing. Those toy axes.
Oh. Toy axes. Wow.
I wouldn't have given Ozzy a real axe or a hatchet. So, no, but it was so cool. You guys had hot dogs and chips. And
yep.
It was a really neat event. So, and we just heard about it. Like, a neighbor of ours was like, hey, we're taking our kids over there. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Yeah, it's our annual flagship event that we, you know, the property isn't typically open to the public throughout the year. So it's kind of the one time a year that really the entire farm is open. Folks can come out and hike the trails, explore the property. We also have activities like the tree climb, the axe throwing.
The line for that was so long.
Yep.
Yeah. And then you guys took us on like a hay rack ride, like a tour.
Yes.
That was cool.
Yep. So do some. And even on those tours, you're not getting to see the whole property. So we always encourage folks just to get out and hike. And
now, how many acres?
So in total, the farm is 240 acres.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. It's a fairly decent size.
And you might have been on our tour. I apologize. I can't remember. But if we were on your ride, you'd remember Ozzy because he was the little one just asking a ton of questions. And I could feel that, okay, maybe we need to tone it down with all the questions. You know, well, what's that? What's this? What's that?
You know? I think that's great, though. You know, I think there's not a whole lot of places kind of like this. Mm-hmm. And especially like, so Forest Festival is a free event, which, you know, is even more helpful for young families with children. I think... You know, there's always going to be a curiosity in a younger
kid's
mind. And if they're already curious about the outdoors, you got to fan that flame a little bit.
Yeah, foster it a little bit, you know, rather than saying, okay,
here's an iPad.
Yeah. No, you guys are really good about answering questions and taking the time. And maybe it was more of the other people on the ride that were getting fed up with
us. Wait, but how did the name, is it because that's the road or was that a family?
So, yeah, the property was owned by the Horning family.
It was a family.
Before,
okay.
And it was written in the will of the Horning family that the property be donated to the university.
Hmm.
So it was donated... The actual donation occurred in 1950. And so previous to that, there was trees on the property, not entirely. You know, there was a lot of farmland and rangeland that livestock was being grazed on. But there were some original stands of native hardwood forest that was not hand planted and probably a fragment of a much wider forested area before really development happened in this area.
Mm-hmm. So was it a ranching family? You mentioned grazing.
I think a little bit. Okay. There was some livestock. I think mainly it was cropland.
Oh.
And the Horning family, actually, they, in articles I had written or read, they are what, I guess you would call them a homesteading family. So the sisters that actually wrote it into their will to donate the property, their grandparents were the original homesteaders of the property.
Oh.
So they would have been third generation owners of the land. And I think they must have had a passion, or they really enjoyed trees themselves, because when in their will they wrote that the property would be donated for forestry purposes, or as a fruit orchard or an experiment research station. So, and I think actually one of the sisters had gone to the university for, I'm not sure what she studied.
That's
but,
what I was thinking. Why did they pick there? And I wonder what makes someone want to donate to a school. I mean, that's dang cool. Obviously, they didn't have any children probably then to give it to.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
Okay.
No.
So there was no next of kin that they were like.
It's like the opposite of that. That saying, you know, the first generation plants the tree, the second generation enjoys the shade under the tree, the third generation cuts the tree down. they donated it, made it into a tree farm. Like,
yes.
They planted thousands of trees, so that's kind of cool.
I always think, you know, they maybe don't get enough credit for their foresight, you know. And actually, there was a period after the donation where the university was looking at all these properties that had been donated to them, and someone in charge decided, no, let's just sell all these properties off. And the only exception at the time was Horning State Farm, because of the specific wording in the Horning sisters' will.
They're not allowed to sell it, basically.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. So the university had more properties donated, and they just decided that's probably too much work. Or whatever, and
yeah,
then they sold them.
Yep.
Huh.
It's a short game, short term gain for somebody that was in charge, and he could, I'm sure, show on a ledger like, oh, look at, I'm at a surplus. Everybody else was working at a deficit, and like, oh yeah, you sold off the greatest assets to the university.
Well,
you're a winner.
We probably needed a new weight room or something.
We probably did. We wanted a better football team.
We needed to recruit.
That's a good full circle.
Yeah. So no, that's super cool that that they did that. Again, you know, being down here for 30 years or however long it's been now, I always knew the name, but I never even knew that was a family.
Yeah.
And then in doing a little bit of research, you know, seeing that they had actually lived there and the farmstead was there.
Yep.
And then we went out and quickly kind of looked at your property and kind of looked at where your buildings are, and you were kind of showing us where the house had been once upon a time.
Yep.
And the old well and those kinds of things.
Corn crib. Yep.
Yeah, the corn crib. Yeah, it's just it's an interesting piece of history there.
Yeah.
Well, we need to circle back because you mentioned it with all the military flags and our new. You know, I work for News Channel Nebraska. We ran a story on it that the day of the dedication.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Honor and remember, and now it's a memorial forest. What was going on that day?
So. I guess I'll go back in time a year or two when the idea was first proposed to us by a man by the name of Jim Meyer. He's the founder of Honor and Remember Nebraska, or at least this memorial forest idea was his vision.
Okay.
And he himself, being a veteran, I think recognized that it's a big... Not to steal his words, but it's a quote I've heard from him so many times that when you die twice. The first time is when your heart stops beating, and then the second time is when your name is no longer spoken.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he recognized that there were all of these both military and first responders, fallen heroes, that, you know, I wouldn't say necessarily were forgotten.
Yeah.
But maybe not remembered as they should be, or in a way that's, I don't know, it's a creative way that his vision was to plant 7,500 trees across the state of Nebraska, each tree representing a fallen hero.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, it's a big project, and there's a lot of counties in Nebraska, but that was kind of his vision, is that each county would have a memorial forest.
Right.
To recognize and honor and remember these fallen heroes.
And at your guys' site there, how many trees will be, or is it done?
It's already
it
planted.
Yep.
Like
yep.
50
so trees were
is
planted.
That what you guys were doing that day? Or
yeah. Oh, so no, what, the dedication or?
Well,
so
when were these trees planted for veterans and where and how? Because you mentioned the cemeteries next door.
Yes. So there, after Jim proposed the idea to the Forest Service, we met with him out at the farm, and we settled on this little one-acre patch of ground that neighbors the Pleasant Ridge Cemetery, mm-hmm. or the Horning Cemetery, as it's sometimes known. And once we decided on that spot, we also recognized, you know, maybe there's an opportunity here to reach across the fence to the neighbors,
yeah.
and see, you know, what their thoughts are on it, you know, because the whole idea was this 1 acre patch could be the 1 acre of the farm that is accessible year round to anyone that's curious,
yeah.
or, you know, maybe their
family.
I want
to go pay tribute to, yeah. you know, our fallen heroes,
yep.
you know, right? That's kind of the idea.
Yep, exactly. And so we have a landscape specialist, Brad Kindler. He designed the memorial grove of trees. He picked the species out. This is all early 2023. Mm-hmm. And then later that fall in 2023, we met out at the 1 acre area with members of the cemetery board, members of our own NFS staff, and then some members of the public. And we planted 50 trees that were sourced from different nurseries across this region of Nebraska.
Very cool.
And another opportunity that was recognized and ultimately capitalized on was the cemetery got to plant seven. There was a mm-hmm. donation of seven trees mm. to the cemetery, and those seven trees were meant to represent each branch of the military
and I like
first
that.
Responders.
Yeah. I think it's great that you incorporated, or like you said, got the cemetery involved,
yeah.
and you know, you guys are working
everybody.
Together because
yeah.
it's right there. Like,
yeah.
it's perfect.
Yeah, and it allowed us to take the fence down that separated the properties, and
okay.
and now
yeah.
it's kind
I don't
of a
even
common
remember
area.
That. I remember us talking about that, and I drove by when I drive by to work. I was looking and thinking, I don't ever remember a fence even being there. But
well,
yeah.
there was for a shorter period of time
okay.
because we were having a trespassing issue.
Oh,
and
shoot.
We were kind. It's kind of the hidden access probably that someone noticed and
I
decided to start using. So we we put up a barrier, and but you know,
sounds like a deer season barrier.
Yeah. More than likely.
Yeah.
So are you responsible for maintaining that area and like
yes.
up do you have to upkeep the flags and those kinds of things?
No, that would be the cemetery.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. the flags are all in the cemetery ground. I am tasked with maintaining the memorial forest itself, mm-hmm. keeping the trees alive and protected from deer damage and browse.
Okay.
That's a big
oh
that's
my.
A big thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wait, what's browse?
So they're just like eating the leaves.
Oh, so do you have something under them, like a fence?
We try to just make a cage that's wide enough that keeps them from being able to reach. They're going to be able to browse some leaves, but the idea is hopefully give the tree enough time to grow tall and out of the reach.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
So have you been out to Forest Lawn? I assume you have. Forest Lawn Cemetery, North Omaha?
I have not.
So years ago, they started an oak tree forest, and it was right after one of their – they built a really nice building kind of doing some upgrades. And this was probably about 15, 20 years ago. But those trees, they protected the heck out of them
yeah.
too. You know what I mean?
Because,
I mean, what does a deer want more than, you know, acorns and supple new little leaves off all these? I mean, it was like a buffet for them. You had all these different varieties of oak trees perfectly laid out on a hillside. It's just beautiful. I got to get back out there and check that out because last time I was there, they were all about that big, about a foot diameter, so they're probably a little bigger now.
But speaking of deer, what other animals? Do you see turkey, and do you see a bunch of stuff?
Yep, like we've got turkey.
Wildlife?
Yep, turkey,
okay.
whitetail, bobcats, coyotes.
Are you allowed to take those, anything out?
No, so
I'm just wondering.
Take them out where?
To the bathroom, what do you mean?
No, I am not allowed to hunt on the property. So there's
okay.
another neat partnership that's been made in previous years with the Nebraska Game and Parks where uh-huh. they hold this mentored youth archery hunting program out there where they'll take area youth that they have an interest in hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they don't have access to hunting ground. Maybe they don't maybe they're interested in hunting. They don't know anything about it. They, you know, the first thing.
Yeah.
And so it's a great program. They all volunteers that are these mentors that will show the kids the ropes of bow hunting and setting up a tree stand and field dressing a deer and just all the steps along the way.
Oh,
and there's,
cool.
You know how much there is to just
right.
learn. And so they get to archery hunt the deer and turkey, and but that's okay with me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't. I try to, you know, facilitate any way I can so that they have a smooth experience. And but yeah. So
the things that are being done with the, you know, community involved out there is pretty cool. That reminds me of like, seems like it'd be a perfect place to do like hunter safety courses or things like that, you know?
Yeah.
Where you guys, because you guys have buildings out there, you can do some stuff outdoors, there might be some shooting involved, you know, gun handling, whatever. And to go back to the event that Andy was referencing, what was it called? The
Forest Fest.
Forest Fest. How many years have you guys been doing that?
Good question. So as it is right now, since 2017, we've been doing it. During the pandemic, there were a couple years we took off.
When you started out there.
Yeah, it was not my idea
to
get it going
on.
Again, but it actually was an idea that had been held at the farm previously back in the 80s up until the late 90s. At that time, it was Forestry Field Days, and it was an event geared more towards landowners or people interested in forest management, timber management. Forest Fest has been going on roughly about as long as I've been there, and it's every year, the event has mostly grown. I think we've kind of reached a plateau point in terms of attendance. The most people we've ever had attend a Forest Festival was 1,300.
Wow.
And
that seems like a lot.
And
that's
a lot
one day or that's a weekend?
It was a one-day event, like four-hour event.
Yeah.
And they all showed up, it seemed, in the same 2 hours.
Were you able to get a gauge of like where people are coming from? Like, is it mostly locals or are they coming
that's
from kind
question.
Of all over?
That's a good question. So we actually had one person or one family that came all the way from York.
Wow.
And it was it was the tree climb. You know, it's such a unique activity. And usually it's Omaha, Lincoln area, southeast Nebraska really.
Yep.
So when you say tree climb, I'm envisioning just like pigs in a tree and they're climbing it.
Mm.
So what was this? Like, I'm sorry, you guys are laughing at me, but how are you going to climb a tree?
Good question. A lot of, if you've ever seen like professional arborists that sometimes will climb trees to prune them.
Because they have like those things on their shoes.
Or like, think of like a rock climber, you know, how he has those pulley systems and the ropes.
Yeah, that's mainly what it is. It's a lot of rope work and there's this, I don't know if it's a prusik knot, there's this prusik knot or something, but there's a knot you can move up this rope that you're climbing, but then if you let your weight down, that knot really grabs and prevents you from going
down. So it is kind of like rock climbing.
In a way, yeah.
So someone was on the top kind of helping pull the kids up.
So someone had spent the previous day setting all these ropes up in the tree on specific branches, with one rope being higher than the others. That's like the rescue rope. And so each kid gets a harness and a hard hat, and then they get
I
get
could
their own rope.
See that being cool. So your kids did do that, or you didn't want to wait in the line?
Well, we didn't quite trust them at this juncture. So. Well, I would have waited through the line, but my God, no way.
So you were like, next.
Next year.
Okay,
we'll revisit that next year.
Yeah.
So, it's coming, though. It's coming.
So that's coming back. You guys plan to...
Yes.
Continue to do that since it was a huge...
Yeah, it's a big outreach event for us. And it's kind of our way of also, you know, giving back and allowing the public to have access to this very unique property and then the opportunity for them to learn.
I love the evolution of this thing where you talk about the hunting education, you know, reaching out to the youth. Forest Fest is getting big. And then also with the... You know, I'm a sucker for things like the memorial deal.
Yeah.
You know,
that's cool.
Because you do. You got to take a step back and remember and be thankful and grateful. And what better way to do it than plant a tree and have a place to go back and think?
Yeah.
You know,
Have
you guys talked at all about like future plans for the property and maybe any kind of other involvement with the public or any of those kinds of things?
There have been unofficial discussions about that. It's always been, you know, I've always thought it would be great to have the property be more accessible, especially to the local area. You know, I think a lot of Plattsmouth residents are curious, or, you know, maybe they don't even know what's out there. I've encountered both attitudes. And one of the main hangups is just staffing, you know, like you asked earlier. I am the only one out there.
Right.
And there would probably, you know, it'd be nice to have a better, like, we already have infrastructure out there, but, you know, it'd be nice to have, if we were going to go down that route, I think there would be some investments needed, mainly.
You need a couple more people.
Yeah.
And
parking and a bathroom that's more than just what's out there
a
now.
A shop, potty.
It seems like something that could be, you know, like you typically see with some of these places where, like, there's some kind of membership and, you know, you get access to certain things with your membership or whatever. I could see it. It's not. I don't know. Because in its current form, it's cool. It's kind of raw. You know, it's
very raw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been? And it's a total. It's a different body. But you guys all work together. Where it's the NFS, Nebraska Forest Service, Game and Parks, NRD has some properties. Yep. Have you been out to Mascantine up in northeast Nebraska?
I have not.
Mascantine Lake. So they tapped into this, and I didn't even know this group of people existed. But they get on mountain bikes and they go on these crazy trails and they build these little like good ones or good trails have like, obstacles and like little wood bridges that if you're like, I wouldn't dream of riding my bike on it now. Now, when I was a kid and I didn't care and I'm like, yeah, let's wreck it. Let's, let's get after it. Some of these bridges are high off the ground and they're only like a 2 foot wide, you know, made of wood planks, like get out of here. I was looking into that. We did some film work for Mascantine a few years ago. And, yeah, there's just this group of people, like snowmobilers, you know, they'll go, well, let's do Wyoming this year. Let's do Montana this year. These extreme dirt bicyclists.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's one of the spots on the map is you got to hit Mascantine in Nebraska. You got to go hit that. And that could totally fit you guys. You know, you just build a bike trail. You know, for mountain bikes and, you know, a little curve here, a little dip there through the trees. And you got this whole built-in system of people that care about the land that, you know, they're not going to abuse it. I don't hear much of that with this group of people, you know, and of course not. They're there to mountain bike and enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah.
So that's one example of what Horning Forest could turn into or could be or could offer.
Yeah.
You know?
So. Absolutely.
Oh, there's Ben pulled up a picture of the pulley, the climb.
Oh, yeah, the tree climb.
The tree climb the with the kids.
I see. Yeah.
Why did I envision pegs in a tree? What a ding dong.
Well, I mean, you're thinking of like how we used to get up into our tree houses.
Yes.
And stuff.
Or like we'd bang boards on the tree and you start climbing it. But.
This one.
Yeah, now you could have a treehouse forest.
Yes, exactly. That's
we got all the ideas for you.
I don't know how I forgot about this, but in this little article they have here, they're talking about Smokey the Bear, and that was always like the forest.
Is that thing still around?
Mascot, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
and he actually just celebrated his 80th birthday.
That's what they were saying here. I totally 80th. Forgot about Smokey the Bear.
He changed up his lingo too, right? It's wildfires.
He's
now.
Not as fire. Accessible, I would say, as back in our time.
Is it?
I don't know that our kids would even know who Smokey the Bear is.
No, I don't know either. I wonder if they talk about that at school.
I don't think they do. I think he needs to
come back
like
around?
A comeback.
That's a national thing, isn't it? The Smoky?
Yep. Yeah.
Only you
can prevent.
You'd always say that.
So it's not only you can prevent forest fires?
It's wildfires now.
Wildfires.
Yeah. Maybe you can help with the distinction.
Yeah, why did they change that?
I don't know.
Wildfires to me seems bigger than forest.
Yeah, maybe wildfires just more all-encompassing.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like it's like.
And I think you had a group of people say come to bat for fires saying no, forest fires are actually a good thing. If you want a healthy forest, you got to have a fire every so often. So I don't know, I think that played a role in it too. You know,
do you have to do any fire training?
One thing we've been trying to implement out at the farm is the use of prescribed fire, and we never have. We got really close last year. Weather got in the way. But yeah, as part of that, I have to do my red card training, which involves a pack test, which would be being able to hike 3 miles in 45 minutes with 45 pounds of weight on you. And which doesn't sound too difficult until about mile and a half.
Oh, that it doesn't feel too heavy, but it does get pretty heavy.
I mean, it's 15 minute mile miles. With
have
that much weight.
Have you had to do that for the department?
No, that's like forestry stuff.
Oh. Wildland fire.
Wildland, yeah.
I have a really perfect property for you guys to practice on, you know, and we did a really good job rotating cattle, so we got some fuel, we got some dead grass, and yeah, you guys will bring you out now. But our community does do a lot of burning, and I think last year's or the year before, we actually had people from the game and parks come out to our little fire department. They're like, what's going on here? Because you guys do more prescribed burn than anybody, and it's really just because it's a community, and like, we kind of rotate around. All right, so we helped this family this year do two or three burns. Now it's his turn out, and it's just kind of a rotation where everybody gets in on it and helps out with it. Yeah. So, yeah. But the first thing you do is, you know, open up the fridge and pull a nice cold one out, and like, oh, well, okay, well, that helps the attendance. Yeah. I don't know if we can incorporate that everywhere. That's just for the meeting. That's not for the work.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
So, what do you think would be your favorite part of the job or the property in general and what you get to do?
For me, it's definitely been just restoring. So, you know, the property went through a long period, maybe even a couple decades, where not much management went on at all. You know, at least not at the scale that it probably needed to.
Yep.
Which is no one's fault. It was probably just a funding issue or staffing at the same time. There was no dedicated position like there is now, where someone's out there all the time. But for sure, yeah, restoring. My favorite project has been the northwest 40 acres of the property is all native trees that weren't hand planted. I think there's been some thinning for firewood that's gone on, a couple walnuts that were harvested for lumber, but it's mainly been untouched, never been plowed. You know, I think maybe they were running livestock through there one time, but to me, it's more fun to be in a forest when you can walk through the trees. And the biggest invasive species that we have that you guys can look out your window and see it too, it's Amur honeysuckle. And it's an understory species that just completely fills the understory.
Yep.
And it's a lot of work to try and remove it, but it's so rewarding when you do and you get to stand back and look at how much more accessible the stand of trees is. It just looks better, you know. It looks like this is how it's supposed to
for
look.
Sure. Yeah.
And on the same hand, after, you know, in some of these areas where we've removed the honeysuckle, native species are coming back now due to the reduced competition and more access to sunlight and water.
Some native grasses, native weeds like dandelions.
Damn dandelions.
Yeah.
If you guys could go ahead and figure out a way to get rid of all that, that'd be great.
I know. It really was tough talked about this for hunting.
Sucked
it was
this year.
But I could see how that could be rewarding because I have thought that sitting in the blind, wow, if all this was gone, how clean would that look?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that sounds weird to say, but
it's how it used to look.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It
so
is.
What the heck? Who brought what bird brought this in?
Uh-oh.
It's a, is it an Asian species?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Which okay. So how did we get that?
It seems to be that there's a lot of invasive Asian species.
Well, and then I feel bad for them over across the pond. Like, what are they saying about American species? Like, where the hell
there's
did this
be,
burrow come from?
Yeah. Why is it I was thinking about it the other day because we were talking about these plants, and I was like, man, if you think about it, like, you've got, like, isn't there, like, an Asian beetle that's bad?
Yeah.
And then there's
ash borer.
But for whatever reason, the people who have named these things have normally put
Asian
the word Asian in the beginning.
Yeah.
So it's like a bug, it's a you know, some kind of animal. Plant. It's a plant. It's a
weed.
There's all these Asian things.
Yeah.
And
African too. You know, African swine flu. African. Well, we can't killer hornets.
Yeah. We can't name it our stuff. We can't be like USA weed.
But that's what it is in Africa.
Right.
Asia. Yeah. I know it is. Yeah.
There has to be some American.
They're like American
pigs. Yeah. That's probably true. We probably do have pigs running around just destroying.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of those species were just brought in sometimes as ornamentals, you know, or, you know, folks went overseas, saw something they liked. Oh, I'd like to plant that in my yard at home in America.
And I want to say a lot of that happened following World War II, where, you know, we had just a lot of young men over there and they would bring things back as like a remembrance or like what you were saying. And I'm pretty gosh darn sure there's a really nice fir tree in the middle of Lynch, Nebraska, and it was a sapling brought back from World War II. And this guy planted two of them, actually, in this front yard, and now it's this huge, you know, 80-foot-tall type of a spruce tree from the hillsides in Germany. You know, so I think a lot of it came that way. Not to point fingers at anybody.
Well, just saying. Yeah. I just feel like... Yeah. It might have just been flown over here, but I guess it was brought here.
There's definitely been some species that were introduced intentionally.
Okay.
And for better or for worse, mostly probably for worse.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, it's kind of one of those unintended consequences things.
Oh, I know another one I thought of the other day, Asian carp.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it's like one thing after another.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And they're probably like American catfish are eating up the bottom of our lakes.
Yeah. Those nasty mud eaters. Yeah.
And I think in these countries, too, where these are coming from, they probably do have a natural, another species that's keeping it in check.
Right,
which is not present here.
Yeah.
And then, I don't think the answer would be to bring that another species. Whatever another that was going to be.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just opening a can of worms.
Yeah.
It does kind of feel like we're, as a world population, we're going down this road where, like, everything is going to become the same. Mm. You know, like,
largemouth bass are going to be about it. Largemouth bass and Asian carp.
And it's going to be the same everywhere you go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, I think about it in, like, hunting terms where, you know, we need to head way out west to go hunt elk.
Mm-hmm.
Not for much longer.
You think they're going to be in our backyard.
Yeah, we're going to be hunting them here.
Oh.
And I think the same thing's happening with things like turkey and whatever else. Everything is just kind of spreading and growing its own...
Redistributing.
Its own self all over the place.
Mountain lions, wolves, you name it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. That's all we need is a mountain lion here.
We got a lot of them
here. Yeah, they're around.
Yeah, I've heard.
Okay, well, I don't want to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're around. All right, well... Andrew, out on the farm out there, I know you guys have surveillance. Mm-hmm. We have a surveillance company that we work with, Barn Owl, barnowl.tech, if you want to check it out. Kind of like a game cam, but really built more for surveillance. We've got them out here that we're testing. Andy's setting one up out at his place.
We set it up following rifle season, deer rifle season, and we have a couple cattle that were loose and we couldn't quite get in, you know, very... overgrown with cedar trees. So we got it set up for kind of both a game cam, but we also want to see if we can find that cow
monitor
on the cattle water.
Yep. So obviously, I mean, there's 100 things you could use it for. It's cellular connected, so it goes directly to your phone. You know, you get trigger events. Up here, we've got it set up as surveillance on the road. So just as we're sitting here having the podcast, I got 3 or 4 notifications about the camera going off.
Wait,
I can
who's
see.
Here?
Mailman.
I'm kidding. I just wondered, or is it another deer?
No, it's not a deer.
Okay.
One of them was a cat.
Season's over. You already filled your
cash. Gosh. Yeah. All right.
Freaking
fine.
Savage. And it's also has solar panels that you can hook up to it, so that you don't have to worry about battery life out there. So, pretty cool setup. As I said, barnowl.tech. If you go there at checkout, if you use code FARMFOCUSED, FOCUSED, all one word, you get 10% off. So check them out, barnowl.tech. And then also, it's Thanksgiving week. I think this is coming out tomorrow or Friday, maybe even later today. I don't know. It depends on whenever you get around to it. This weekend, Black Friday and Cyber Monday, on the Farm Focused website, is going to be some pretty cool specials, so check them out. Most of it's going to be buy one, get a second one half off, so people are getting 50% off items over the weekend. So
cool.
Check out the gear, the shirts, the hats,
yep,
all the stuff from your favorite agricultural YouTube creators.
I was going to say, I think I saw one that I really liked from Zach.
Yeah.
Farm around and find out.
Yeah.
That's such a Zach take on it. Rather than cursing, you know, turn it into kind of a family-friendly, fun little saying.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some cool things there, and we're busy as heck right now. It's that time of year, so we better end this and get back to work.
Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah.
Andrew, thanks for coming, man. It was fun.
Thank you, guys.
It's nice to meet you.
I was, just to kind of close it out for folks, I was looking online here on Facebook. There's Horning State Farm, and it is it's a member site. So you go on there and you just, you know, ask to be a part of it to get approved. And you can learn about it. On Instagram, that's an open one. It doesn't look like it gets used quite as much, but it's horning.state.farm. And then also on that memorial deal, I found their website. It's honorandremembernebraska.org.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to check out...
really cool.
Yeah, the specific...
locations they have.
Yep.
And it looks like, like you were saying, there's a lot on there.
Yeah, okay. Folks can donate there too if they want to. But
and I'm sure Jim would be, you know, if there is a community or even, you know, someone that's interested in helping his project along, you know, I'm sure he would be more than receptive if you wanted to reach out to him. And
I think they might have found some with the cemetery deal, because there's a lot of old cemeteries that are becoming forgotten, getting smaller, and need tree work, or, you know, their old pine trees are falling over. Plattsmouth Park just had a big pine tree get blown over on that windy day.
Yeah.
So there's an opportunity there for, let's plant some new trees with this group, and then this group will take care of those trees. And like, there's just a, like you guys did with them, you know, there's a way to work together and everybody gets something out of it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if folks want to get involved or want to come out, you know, to the events that you guys have, I think it looks like on Facebook, you know, join that group and that'll be the best way to stay in touch. And
then that kids event, do you know the date for next year or has it been set?
It's usually, so we always try to have it coincide with the Harvest Festival here that locally goes on. Mm-hmm. So I think, which is usually the first weekend in September.
Friday. September-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Just so people know.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Anything else that you want to leave the folks with or?
No, not really. I just would say, you know, if you're in, you know, especially if you have a property that you think has invasive species on it, it's not too late to get started on it. I think, especially in this area in Plattsmouth, it almost feels like to really regain control, it would almost have to be a community-wide effort.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's definitely a lot of work. But I think even just a slight reduction, it would be awesome. Because that would give, you know, some of those native species a chance to regenerate.
Yep.
Yeah. And,
Well, let's put it together, man. Let's do it. I'm in. I'm ready to work.
All right. Yeah.
We can bring in the students. We could
get a prescribed burn going here and there.
Hey, all of it.
Let's do it.
All the things. Yeah. Cool. Well, it's been fun, man. Thanks for coming out. You guys got anything else?
No, we're good.
Later.
All right. Peace. Close it out.